You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morency. Welcome to the program to put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. The Friday afternoon edition of the program, we're going to run the gauntlet. We got a little bit of something for everybody on the show today. Steve Merrill will join us. We'll take a look at the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor lines and the line movement. There's been a lot of line movement over the last 48 hours or so. We'll take a look at some of the props for the big fight as well. NASCAR goes to Michigan. We break that down with Steve Merrill. We talk Major League Baseball with Steve Merrill. The Raging Redhead Cam Stewart joins me in studio. We talk a little U.S. Open golf as the U.S. Open golf tournament's off to a great start. They found E. coli in one of the watering stations, so it's nice to see that there's a live bacteria fungus and people are getting sick. And, oh, yeah, the blimp crashed and burned. Other than that, it was a great start. Will Ricky Fowler crash and burn? That's the question. Is it just me? I can't look at Ricky Fowler without thinking of that baby on The Simpsons, that like his little Maggie Simpson's nemesis. You know, that baby, you know, with the eyebrows. You know, that's Ricky Fowler. That's Ricky Fowler. But like Dan Daly, a great golf handicapper that joined us on the radio show the other night, said, listen, Ricky will find a way to screw it up, but his life's still good. He's still going to leave with a hot 19-year-old chick on his arm. So, hey, it doesn't suck being Ricky Fowler. Ricky came in at about the 22-1 range. We'll break it down with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, as well as some hot roster baseball. The kid is hot tonight. Whoa. There's actually a lot of hot hitters. The ball is starting to fly out of the ballpark. Speaking of baseball, we're going to be joined by one of the greatest closers of all time. And in fact, he actually was once the all-time saves leader, but he's been surpassed over the years. A man that they called the Terminator. Jeff Reardon joins us on the program. Jeff Reardon, former Met, Expo, Minnesota Twin. And I don't know if you noticed, the Minnesota Twins are playing some really good baseball this year. Huge surprise. Probably the biggest surprise of the year. A lot of people expected the Twins to regress. There's been a couple of surprises. Colorado, I'm not shocked by. I told you Colorado was easily going to win 80 and a half games. That was one of our three baseball futures we gave you. Arizona is a big surprise, but Minnesota's shocking. But it's actually the 30th anniversary of the Minnesota Twins World Series win, and not the one against the Braves. The Twins will rack them up, man. The one against the St. Louis Cardinals, seven-game series. Jeff Reardon was on that team, 30th anniversary. So we'll talk some Expos, we'll talk some Gary Carter, we'll talk some Tim Raines, we'll talk some Twins. In other words, we're talking baseball with one of the best closers ever. Jeff Reardon joins us on the program. So we've got a lot of stuff to get to. Let's get right down to business. The NBA draft is now less than a week away. And never has there ever been a time in the NBA draft that it's been as critical not to screw up as it is right now. All the talk of the Golden State Warriors ruining the National Basketball Association. The Warriors are not a super team. They drafted Curry. They drafted Thompson. All right? You know, they drafted Draymond Green. They were smart enough to get rid of Monte Ellis and bring in Bogut and hand over the keys to Steph Curry. So they put this together, and it's up to general manager to put it together. Now, the NBA draft, the most important of all the drafts. You know, the NFL draft is the most hyped. But, you know, an NFL GM would tell you off the record that out of the seven draft picks, he really is only expecting about four of them to even make the team. Yeah, how many sixth and seventh round draft picks? I don't know, yeah, Tom Brady. Yeah, whatever. You know, generally, out of the seven, you can even take a flyer on a couple of guys. You can take a long shot on a couple of guys. And, you know, you don't even really expect them to make the team. You look at basketball, there's only two rounds. And the second round is basically useless and meaningless in a National Basketball Association. It shouldn't be. But only a few teams are smart enough to actually find diamonds in the rough in the second round. San Antonio Spurs have always been good at it. Of course, Isaiah Thomas was the 49th pick or something like that? 48th pick in the second round, whatever it is. There are exceptions to the rule. But for the most part, you can't mess up your first round pick. You mess up. You have a top five pick in the NBA draft. You screw it up, you're going to suck for another 3 years. And that's why, you know, we see the same team suck all the time and screw up all the time. So you can't mess this up. Now, the Boston Celtics, they don't suck. And they happen to have the first overall picks. Long story why, but they do. So, you know, is it Markelle Fultz? Everybody, listen, the media has done their job, haven't they? According to the media, Markelle Fultz, slam dunk, number one, first overall. Why? Because they said so. Lonzo Ball, slam dunk, second overall to the Lakers. Why? Because they want it to happen and it makes sense to them. Same people that wanted Johnny Manziel to get drafted. Oh, you better take Ball. Oh, he's from there. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I don't give a crap where he's from. And I'll tell you what, the Los Angeles Laker fans, they don't care where he's from either. They want to win, all right? They don't need UCLA Bruins on their basketball team for the sake of it. If a Laker fan wants to watch UCLA Bruins, he'll go over to Pauley Pavilion and watch the UCLA Bruins, right? A Laker fan wants to win right now. But if you're Boston, and word out of Boston is right now, they're not sure about Fultz. Now, I have nothing bad to say about Markelle Fultz. The kid is a stud, but I will tell you this. I watch a lot of Washington Husky basketball. Why? Because I'm a degenerate gambler. And I watch almost every Husky game because they're always the late night game, and that's what I watch. So, the Washington Huskies, they're almost like the Texas Tech Red Raiders of football. Yeah, Markelle Fultz put up big points. So did Andrew Andrews a couple of years ago. Remember when me and Cam were doing the DraftKings show when they could do college basketball? Andrew Andrews, that kid was putting up 20, 21 points a night. You know, they don't play defense. They only won like 13 games or something last year. Fultz is great. Nothing bad to say about him. I'm just not sure he's a slam dunk first overall. And if you're the Boston Celtics, there's no room for him. The Celtics have a hell of a lot of decisions to make over the next 6 days, man. This is the thing with success. Danny Ainge has a wealth of assets to deal with here. He's got to figure this out. If they get Markelle Fultz, fine. You're going to bring in Gordon Hayward as well. We all know Gordon Hayward's going to be a Boston Celtic. There's not room for Isaiah Thomas. And as good as Isaiah Thomas is, he's the worst defender in his position in the damn league. They played better against Cleveland without him. So I think they probably move. If you move Isaiah Thomas, you draft Markelle Fultz. But now they're saying maybe they take Josh Jackson, and Josh Jackson is the best player in the draft as far as I'm concerned. If I'm the L.A. Lakers and they go with Fultz first overall, forget about Lonzo Ball, and I'm not here to rip Lonzo Ball, but Lonzo Ball to me is like a sixth pick, seventh pick. There are a couple of other guys that can have a serious-ass impact on your franchise, and they're not named Lonzo Ball, you know? And I'll tell you, Josh Jackson's the guy. We're talking about Kawhi Leonard 2.0. You know, they say, oh, he can't shoot. The guy hit like 32% of his threes or something like that. It's not like the kid tosses bricks. We're not talking about Dwight Howard here. Kid's like 20 years old, played 1 year of college basketball. Don't tell me he can't shoot. You know, Kawhi Leonard couldn't shoot and couldn't score at San Diego State either. And I told you years ago, Kawhi Leonard was going to be a superstar in the NBA. Josh Jackson is that guy. And I guarantee you the Philadelphia 76ers are going to take him if they get the opportunity to. Fox is a badass. I think Tatum could be a difference maker as well. But when it's all said and done, I think Josh Jackson is the best player on the board and a player that can have a huge impact on your basketball team. Thinking about if you're the Lakers. You bring in Lonzo Ball right now. Why the hell does Paul George want to come here as a free agent? Why is he going to want to go there? What, he can deal with Lonzo Ball and his old man? Why is Russell Westbrook even going to consider that? Why would you want? How would you? You can't even get Westbrook if you have Lonzo Ball. I'll tell you right now, and I'll give you a word of advice, Rob Pelinka. You take Josh Jackson with the second overall pick. You get rid of the punks on your team like D'Angelo Russell and Clarkson and Swaggy P and all these other dudes that are more interested in banging chicks and appearing on TMZ than they are banging the boards and getting you a rebound and a win. You bring in guys that want to win. Brandon Ingram can stay. Randall's good. You stay. Larry Nance Jr., you're good. You stay. We draft Josh Jackson. We have a young nucleus. And now next year we tell Paul George and Russell Westbrook, look what we got going on here. And you've got yourself a basketball team. Rob Pelinka and the L.A. Lakers need to remember as far as Lonzo Ball and the fans talking about Lonzo Ball. Remember what Buddy Ryan said, the one Ryan that can actually coach for real. Buddy Ryan said, listen to the fans, become a fan. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. As we promised off the start of the program, we got a little bit of something for everybody on the show. We're going to talk a little bit about the Mayweather-McGregor, NASCAR from Michigan, Major League Baseball Board tonight. From a betting standpoint, Cam Stewart will join me. We'll talk U.S. Open, and we'll talk baseball from a hot roster DFS standpoint. And speaking of baseball, Jeff Reardon, who was once actually the all-time leading saves guy in Major League Baseball. He's been passed now because the guy hasn't played in a while, but Jeff Reardon, World Series champion, he's played a couple of World Series, He's on a bunch of teams, man. He's played a lot of really big baseball games over the years, Jeff Reardon. Jeff Reardon will join us. And one baseball game that he didn't play in was Blue Monday, the most infamous day in Montreal Expo history, of course, when the Los Angeles Dodgers beat the Expos in the top of the ninth inning. Rick Monday hit a home run. They won 2-1. It's known as Blue Monday now. And they didn't use the bullpen. They brought in Steve Rogers, who was the best starter at the time for the Expos. They didn't go to the bullpen at the time. Starter gave up a home run. And for the last 35 years, everyone in Montreal has wondered if the right thing was done. So we're going to ask the man himself, Jeff Reardon, about this. So we're getting deep on the show today, man. Steve Merrill joins us. Pat's leadoff. What's up, Steve?
That's probably when Fernando Valenzuela was in his prime for the Dodgers.
Fernando Valenzuela started that game. He was a
rookie. Yeah, I was going to say.
That's what I figured. He was a rookie, 1981. Fernando
Minier. So 36 years. You said 35, so I was thinking 1982. So, yeah.
I said it off the top of my head. I just pulled the number out of my air. I was going to say 40 years ago, but I was like, it wasn't 40 years ago.
Yeah, 36. You're pretty close, though. Yeah, it was 81 was Fernando's big rookie year, and I don't think he won Cy Young as a rookie, did he? But he came pretty close. He never was quite as good as he was that first season. That left-hander screwball.
He did. Yeah. And if you can, who is it? Is it Warman in there? Warman's usually pretty good at getting this stuff back. He was the rookie of the year in 1981. I believe he was also the Cy Young Award winner.
I believe he was as well, because I don't think it had ever happened before.
Yeah, and if you remember, Steve, he won like his first 9 starts, remember? Like, hey, there's this fat Mexican dude, man. And, he's 1-0, he's 2-0, he's 6-0, he's 7-0. And Fernando Mania caught on.
Right, and because he was in L.A.,
of course. So he wasn't the Cy Young Award winner in 81? Yeah, he was.
I'll tell you, another guy that probably came close to doing that was Doc Gooden, Dwight Gooden, in 84, I believe. It's his rookie year, and he was never quite the same either for different reasons,
obviously. You're right, Fernando had peaked. They won the World Series, and it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, and Fernando had that. He was a left-hander with the screwball, and that's what was throwing all the guys off. It was just something very unique, but then people caught on to it.
And you know, it was amazing, actually. It came full circle, because I was a Dodger and Expo fan, a diehard of both growing up, but it was a bittersweet day that day. It was a horrible day for me, even as an 11-year-old. It was amazing. When I moved to Los Angeles, when I was in a band and stuff, Steve, I was at Dodger Stadium, Fernando Valenzuela's last year. I saw him pitch a no-hitter. I've been to a ton of baseball games in my life and never a no-hitter, and finally it happened, man. It was like a Friday night. I got goosebumps now. It was against St. Louis Cardinals, and it was crazy. It was Mexican Heritage Night, Steve, all right? It was Mexican Heritage Night in Chavez Ravine on a Friday night. Fernando Valenzuela had come back. Everyone was sort of at the end, and the son of a bitch no-hit the St. Louis Cardinals, man. It was insane. It was like one of the top sporting events I've ever been to in my life.
Yeah, and that's also probably a good handicapping factor. I had Fernando on the mound for Mexican Heritage Night. And
next time.
In hindsight, that was a 10-star pick right there.
Yeah, next time a Mexican dude's pitching on Mexican Heritage Night, you take him. All right, that's the moral of the story.
That's 1-0 all time.
All right, so Mayweather and McGregor, I saw you tweeting about the odds and the probabilities of Mayweather winning the fight. It's amazing, though, Steve. I've been bringing this up. As far as the marketplace and the reality of what the line should be, I've never seen them so apart before. And it's crazy you say that, you know what, Mayweather right now -550 is actually a great play and a value bet. But we can wait because it's going to continue to come down. It opened up in the -1200 range. It's already down into as low as 470 in some of the European offshore sports books right now, which is it's absolutely incredible to me. And, what's amazing about this, put it in this perspective. They're saying, the odds makers, with the number that they're saying, that he's got a better chance of beating Floyd Mayweather than Miguel Cotto did. Cotto. Like, they're a big Medina. Big-time boxers, Floyd was -700. Now he's, like, -550 against a guy that's never boxed in his life before. So I said, and I got the Conor lovers and nut huggers, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. He's got a shot. And I'm telling him, I said, it's free money. And I said, the line should be 25-1. But everyone's betting Connor as it is, so they don't need to make it 25-1. And then Scott K from the Greek, well-respected odds maker, sent me a tweet and admitted. He goes, I think it really should be 20-1, but the market speaks otherwise. It's the market. Drunk Irishman are making a guy that should be a 20-to-1 dog a 5-to-1 dog.
Yeah, we see this quite often in these high-profile sporting events. In general, the public always backs favorites. We all know that. But in high-profile events, when they're getting big plus money, that's not the case. It's the one time that the public comes in on underdogs. We see it in the Super Bowl. The money line is always lower on favorites in the Super Bowl than it really should be based on the point spread, like in a regular season game, because the public, instead of taking the points, they like the plus 200 or the 3-to-1 payoff on the dog to win outright. We see it all the time in these big boxing matches, as you know, Gabe. Throughout the years, the big prize fights, the plus money always gets some heavy public action. The sharps usually wait to play the favorites until near game time or near fight time because they know it's going to keep dropping.
Well, you're exactly right.
Right, this line will close higher, so the question becomes, when does it hit rock bottom? At minus 500, minus 400? Because it'll close at minus 800, minus 1,000 probably.
I don't know. I think it's going to continue
maybe
to come
not,
down.
Yeah, maybe not that high, because there's going to be a lot of McGregor money in Vegas that night as well.
I'll tell you right now, my advice is if you like Conor McGregor, you better bet him now. I think it comes down more. I think Floyd Mayweather is going to bait everybody. I think he's going to put out rumors that he's having a bad camp.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to, because
like
he
that.
Makes money off for the pay-per-views more than anyone here. He's running this operation. He's just paying Conor in the UFC after. So he's getting, you know, he wants pay-per-view sales. Floyd Mayweather is also a degenerate gambler. He also is going to bet on himself. He's going to want to get the best number. He's going to put out rumors.
Can he do that?
Yes. Yes, you can. Yeah, you're allowed to bet on yourself. You just can't bet against yourself.
Sure, but I'm surprised they even let you bet on yourself.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, you can bet on yourself. So he's going to bet on himself. So we know he is. He always does. So, you know, we know he's going to. And we also know he's going to want to get the best line. I guarantee you. He wants to put it out there so people think they have a shot so they actually buy the damn fight. And then they're going to say, oh, Conor's got a great chance. He knocked somebody out in sparring. I guarantee you guys this. Write this down, Warman. I guarantee you. 3 weeks from now, rumors are Floyd's struggling. He looks old. Bad camp. And, oh, boy, Conor's knocking people out in camp, boy. I got to tell you, wow. Ooh, look at the countdown shows. And then Floyd's going to be playing everybody. He's going to bet like $4 million on himself. And, you know, and it's funny. You're already making $250 million a night. You know, why not make an extra four betting, Steve?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize he could bet on himself. Just a few things about this fight. I mean, first of all, it's a shame that McGregor's going to lose because in a one-on-one real fight, he would dominate. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. And if it was anything other than a boxing match, he would dominate. But it's a boxing match, and you got to handicap what it is. He can't kick him. A couple things. First of all, I think the disqualification odds on McGregor are going to be very, very enticing to me when they're at plus money, I'm assuming. I haven't seen him yet. But if he's getting clowned, if he's getting embarrassed, and Mayweather's just toying with him, which is very possible, third, fourth round, just popping him, getting out, just making him look silly. Does he throw a leg kick and just end the thing, gets disqualified? I'll tell you right now, it's a Tyson Holyfield scenario, but it would be brilliant on McGregor's part for several reasons. First of all, he would get out there without getting his butt kicked. He might knock Mayweather down with an interim. He would lose the fight. But everybody would know that he really could have beaten Mayweather in a kickboxing match.
Yeah, so
he can entice him into a kickboxing match with Mayweather, will never in a million years do, obviously. And he keeps his image. So I'll tell you right now, I don't think that's going to happen because I think McGregor actually is a good guy, and I think he has a lot of respect for the sport. Otherwise, I think that disqualification odds is going to be very enticing to plus money on McGregor.
The only thing that worries me about betting everything that I have on Mayweather and his prop, Mayweather's going to win. But as far as, I think something shady could happen. And like you said, Steve, listen, these guys are making $500 million. Floyd's getting most of it, but Conor's still getting 100.
Right.
So that's a lot of freaking money. Let's just say there's an accidental headbutt, Steve, in the second round. Fight can't continue. No contest. We'll see you back here on October the 19th, guys. Buy your tickets now. You know, like,
you're not going to lose your bet on that, will you?
No, you'll just get the money back.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's not going to hurt you. I mean, that's a push. I mean, tell me, because I'm with you on this. What is your concern about the Mayweather bet? Because I do think it's becoming unbelievably enticing.
There's
now
no concern. The only concern would be that if he was going to throw the fight somehow, he's not going to do it. He's
but
got a perfect record.
At 49-0, I don't
exactly.
think he's ever. Exactly.
There's nothing to it. Now, how about this for a prop? Will Conor McGregor score a knockdown? Yes, plus 350. So plus 350, Floyd's got to go to one knee at some point, man. He's got to get knocked down.
Here's the thing with McGregor. He's got a very unique stance. He's got that long, bouncing stance. He's a southpaw, which obviously gives him a little bit of an edge over Mayweather compared to a conventional fighter. And I like the age difference. Those are the two X factors for me. You know, Mayweather's 40 and a half. He's been out for a couple years. We don't know how sharp he's going to be. He was still okay against Pacquiao, so I'm assuming he can still fight. Or
he doesn't drink and party, really. He parties with chicks, but he doesn't do drugs or anything like that. You know?
And McGregor did box. You forget he was 3-1, I think, as an amateur. He came up as a boxer in his teens, but obviously that was not even professional level. But McGregor, obviously, he keeps his distance very well. That could maybe allow the fight to go on a bit. But then if it keeps going on, this is the guy that fights 3 or 5 round fights in the UFC. It could go 12 rounds. I mean, that's a huge disadvantage for McGregor. It's really hard to make a case for him. But like I kept saying, he's a better fighter overall. I mean, obviously, McGregor would dominate a kickboxing match in one round. I mean, the minute he kicked Mayweather one time, it'd be over. But you can't do that. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, I mean, if you really look at it from a technical boxing perspective, it's a complete mismatch. And it is coming pretty tempting now, getting him at minus 400, minus 500 instead of minus 1,000.
Very good point that you raise, actually, Steve, as far as the length of the fight. Most of Conor's fights are pretty fast, too. He has been in a 20, you know, I guess, yeah, he went 25 minutes with Diaz. He went the distance 15 minutes with Holloway. I think that's pretty much the exception of him going the distance. That's a very good point that you raise, because I think Floyd could toy with him early. But he can also just sort of wait for Conor to gas, swing it air, get frustrated a little bit. Because I'm looking at the props. The biggest payday for Floyd is Floyd to knock him out in the first round, 28-1, plus 2,800. The biggest payday for Conor is the same, 40-1. Now, I'm telling you also, if you're going to take Conor to win the fight, you might as well take him by knockout and get the prop money because he's not going to win a decision.
First, second, or third round. Yeah, first, second, or third round is the only way.
He's not going to win a decision. But the lowest prop, and this is what you have to look for, what does the book think? A sixth round. That's the lowest one, Steve, 1,100. Everything else, they're giving the 1,800, 25-1. Floyd Mayweather to stop Conor in the sixth is only plus 1,100. So that's something to remember and keep your eye on. We got a lot of time to talk about this, Steve. We've already only got 3 minutes left here. NASCAR Firekeepers 400 from Michigan. Big race for the manufacturers because it's in Michigan in the backyard. All the big-time executives are there and the luxury tents and all that. It's a big-time event. Kyle Larson has won the last two races on these two-mile tracks. He won here. He won in California. Keselowski, this is his home track, but he's never won. But he always runs real strong here, man. He's got an average finish of 7.2 over his last 10. Joe Gibbs Racing, still winless on the year. Matt Kenseth is attractive at 14-1, a three-time winner here. Kyle Busch won here in 2011, but he struggled here as of late. Kevin Harvick, still looking for his first win. Seven top fives in his last eight starts on this track. But the guy I'm picking to win, Joey Logano, 12-1. I'm feeling Joey this week, Steve.
I thought you were going to go with Chase Elliott, actually.
You know what? I got your guy Chase right after this, but he's only 8-1.
Yeah, but he finished second in both races last year, and he's yet to win. We keep saying how close he is. This definitely could be the week. Keselowski was third and fourth in the two races last year. Harvick was fifth in both races last year in Michigan. He hasn't won, as you mentioned. Kyle Larson, though, first and third in the two races last year, and he was fastest in the practice earlier. He's going to be tough to beat once again, but it's amazing how similar the two Michigan races were last year. Most guys were top 10 in both races. I expect those guys to do well again this week.
Well, Chase Elliott finished second in Boulder. He was right there. He's not good.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? But look, but Larson was 1-3 in the two races, the two young guns.
You know, it's funny, Steve. I had to bring your boy up. I know Larson, the odds are just kind of low here. I don't know. Call it a gut instinct or whatever. I'm feeling.
Paul Menard?
I'm feeling Logano.
Hey, listen, Logano. Okay, Logano.
Yeah, no, Logano. Yeah, no, not Menard. No.
That's our long shot Truex point. He's good on this track. Yeah, that's what I thought you were going with there.
Truex you got to bring up as well, but he's in the plus 600 range too only.
Yeah, Truex was only 12th and 20th last year, surprisingly, Gabe, and he finished third in both Michigan races the year before. He was fourth fastest today in the practice. So if he has good practice times, he's got to keep an eye on as well.
All right, Steve, we got to get out of here. But we always talk about who's hot, who's not. The Marlins are suddenly hot, 12-5 in their last 17 baseball games. Kansas City Royals on a roll. They've now won five straight. And the big high-profile matchup, Red Sox and Astros tonight. Pomeranz blows. I think it's a nice price with the Astros tonight. I like the Marlins, I like the Royals, and I like the Astros out of those three.
Yeah, Miami last year was the second or third best batting average in the league. So they're actually a pretty good offensive team, and you always look for that for current form during the regular season, as we talk about. Kansas City was god-awful the first month and a half. You kind of knew they were going to turn it on at some point. It looks like they're doing that now.
Steve Merrill, check him out over at coverageexperts.com. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, so is it hot roster? Jeff Reardon. Jeff Reardon or Cam? Damn you, Reed. What is this? Come on. All right, we'll take a quick break. Cam Stewart joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. It's chaos here when Cam comes into the studio. At least you haven't fallen out of the chair.
Exactly.
That was epic. At least you haven't fallen out of the chair. Before we get to some Major League Baseball, some hot roster DFS action, let's check in with the U.S. Open. They got off to a great start yesterday at Erin Hills. Ricky Fowler put up a 65. The blimp crashed and burned.
Yeah.
The pilot of the blimp is in serious condition in the hospital with burns. And people have contracted E. coli from drinking water.
Oh, great.
Great job, Wisconsin. Great job.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
No, that's...
You saw the blimp go down.
Oh, yeah, I know about the blimp. Yeah, I didn't know about the E. coli scare.
E. coli
found in drinking water.
Found in drinking water. Health officials say E. coli. Health officials say E. coli. God, that's the biggest thing, the most annoying thing with the internet.
What, the pop-ups?
The pop-ups.
And the sound?
Yeah, I know. The pop-ups. All right? If I wanted to hear your take, I'd hit play. Pop-ups! Yeah, health officials say E. coli bacteria has been found in drinking water station at Erin Hills Golf Course where the U.S. Open is underway. The public health department identified the bacteria in water samples taken from a hydration station connected to a well near the 12th hole.
Oh, that's wells.
Stay away
holes.
From the 12th.
Yeah, sometimes, you know what I mean? You got to be careful with those old wells. You never know how long that water's been lingering or what's inside. But yeah, tough times for Wisconsin. You said it, blimp and E. coli.
All right, so check it in right now. Ricky Fowler.
Yep.
He's -7.
Hasn't teed off yet.
Paul Casey.
Now, Gabe.
-17.
He is the story of the tournament. Paul Casey took a triple bogey in this tournament. He could have gone backwards. So he had it to 7-under, went all the way back to 3-under, and then 4, 5, 6, 7. Casey's not going away, Gabe. He's one of those guys. In the old days, he would have been, oh my God, I took a triple, I'm done. But he grinded all the way back to the top. Lots of respect to Paul Casey. I usually take him every week, but his putter's so bad. But anyway, he's on fire.
About Tommy, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
What, Tommy Fleetwood?
Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood Mac.
I love Fleetwood Mac. Sorry, camera two, Drew. He's on Siwoo Kim, but he's right there as usual. I don't know what it is about camera two, Drew. He just lives a charmed life. Whatever he touches, it turns to gold.
Yeah. Do you have a thing for Asian chicks, too? Like, you only bet on Asian golfers.
Yeah, it's true. It's like my buddy Ian. He only likes Asian women, and you only like Asian golfers. I don't know what your story is.
He's like George St. Pierre. Yeah, he likes Asians.
See what Kim's delivered for him, I'll tell you that.
All right.
It's Friday, Moretzi. How you doing, buddy? How's the week been treating you?
Crappy.
Really?
All right, let's get down to business.
Okay.
No, the picks are good.
And we got Red Heat and Rage tonight on the Fantasy Radio
we're
Network.
We're claiming on a horse tonight. That's what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, tonight. Yeah. We're going to be official horse owners tonight.
That's right. And all you haters out there will have to shut up. And me and Cam, we're going to be in the winner's circle next
week. That's the best. Hey, your horse sounds like a pyramid scheme. Every time I open up on the radio, I'm doing AM 640 hits. No one believes me. But anyway, we'll have the last laugh.
Let's talk some hot roster.
Yep.
All right, the ball's starting to fly out of the ballpark as of late,
sure
Cam.
Is.
The weather's starting to heat up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of heating up, well, we're talking about a guy right now that's let off both back-to-back games.
Sorry. Rizzo.
Rizzo.
Rizzo. I thought you were talking about Goldschmidt. But I like both guys tonight, Morenzi.
Oh, Goldschmidt.
What a matchup.
Goldschmidt and Rizzo. Yeah, who are you going to take here, Cam? Because they're both, what do you got here?
Here's the thing, Gabe. Goldschmidt, even the 13 steals, the guy's batting average is absolutely unbelievable. 425 in June, and the thing I like, I know it's a small sample size, but our boy Nola pitching for Philadelphia tonight, this guy's met him twice, 2-for-2 against him with a triple. I absolutely love Paul Goldschmidt. Rizzo's been hot. I know he's got the 2 dingers and the 4 RBIs, but sign me up with Goldschmidt as a 1-point dog on hot roster. Oh, you can't beat that.
Yes.
The dogs are hot tonight on hot
roster. This is a tough one only in the sense because Rizzo and Goldschmidt are both good.
Mm-hmm.
Nola's terrible.
Yes.
Enola is terrible. 1-4 with a 4.34 ERA in his last five starts. Rizzo was never seen Williams before. He's never started versus the Cubs. Mm-hmm. Relief appearances.
Goldschmidt, you're a point dog, Gabe. You get a point. Why not?
I got to go with Rizzo.
Okay, they're not making it easy.
I got to go with Rizzo. All right, what about the next one here, Cam? What do you got?
Well, yeah, Lindor Chocolates versus Altuve. This should be interesting. As for Lindor, this guy's batting 184 in June, one walk, and no, like, what's this guy doing? No home runs, only four extra base hits in 49 at bats.
But three hits. On Wednesday night.
But he's also facing not Gabe's buddy Kyle Turley, but Nick without a C, Nick Turley for Minnesota tonight. This guy's a gas can coming up from AAA ball. But Altuve, I love the numbers. 5-for-12 against Drew Pomeranz, hitting .417 with a double. Sign me up. I get Altuve as a dog again. I told you it's the Humane Society plus one on hot roster. Altuve.
I'll go Altuve as well. I'll agree. All right, now we got teammates going head-to-head.
Yeah, all these teammates matchups are very difficult.
And I got to tell you what, I'm walking a dog on this one. I already liked Arenado in this head-to-head matchup, and I'm getting a point and a half, Ken.
It's funny you mentioned that, Gabe. Both guys have pretty good numbers. Amarja pitching for the Giants tonight, but take a look at this one. Nolan Arenado is a 1.5-point dog on the hot roster, also hitting 10-for-23 against Amarja with a .435 average. Wow. Sign me up. We're almost getting 2 points. I'm with you, Morenci. I would have taken Arenado at -1.5. He's plus 1.5.
Listen,
Arenado.
Blackman's 6-for-23 in his career against Samardzija.
Not
he's
bad.
It's 6-for-23. He's batting .263. Not like the numbers Cam just brought up. 10-for-23 against Samardzija. 6 RBIs. .435 batting average. Not to mention Arenado. 4 RBI last night as well. Ball was really flying out of the ballpark. We're in agreement. All right, Arenado against Blackman. We're both on board.
Yep.
Let's talk about Miguel Cabrera and Nelson Cruz.
I'm telling you, Gabe, I'm going to do the whole hot roster dog four-step tonight with Nelson Cruz as a half-point dog. This is the beautiful thing. Nelson Cruz gets Texas tonight. Let's talk about Tyson Ross. He's making his MLB debut. We know about him and his numbers in the minors are pathetic.
Well, return.
Absolutely. His return. But he's a gas can. His numbers in AAA ball were brutal. And you're going to do this well against Cruz? I don't think so. Cabrera's a little bit banged up, but let's give him credit. Great numbers against Ramirez pitching for Tampa Bay. He's 3-for-6 against him with a home run. Very difficult. Both guys are going to blow it up, but I really like Cruz's situation in a high-scoring game against Texas. Give me Cruz.
Yeah, I'll go with Cruz, too.
Very difficult, though.
Tough,
they're not making
one.
It easy on
tough
us.
Tough one.
This
tough
is
one.
My favorite, well, one
Josh
of my favorite
Donaldson.
Plays.
Josh Donaldson.
Yes.
Greater or less than 6.5 points.
Keep climbing. Keep climbing the
Flying
ladder.
High.
Woo. Listen to this one, Gabe. You want stats? We'll give you stats.
Soar like an eagle, Cam.
Soar like an eagle. 6 home runs since returning from injury on May 26th, batting .341 in June. 9 ribbies, 9 walks. The beautiful thing, he's up against Jose Quintana, the White Sox tonight. Donaldson, 5-for-11, including a home run and a double, hitting .455 against him. Also hitting .375 against left-handed pitching and 16 at-bats. And his last 7 games, hitting .420. Give me Josh Donaldson and the over.
Cam, time flew by. If you want more of the Rage of Redhead, tune in to Red Heat and Rage Radio tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and we'll know whether we
own a horse.
Whether we own a horse or not. Jeff Reardon, the Terminator, joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci, and let's talk some baseball. Let's go down memory lane and talk with a man that was a 4-time All-Star, a World Series champion, at one point the all-time saves leader in Major League Baseball history, and arguably the coolest nickname in Major League Baseball history, the Terminator, a former Met, Expo, Twin, Red Sox, Brave, Red, and Yankee. To me, he's an Expo, but if you're a Twins fan, hey, he's probably a Twin because he's a World Series champion with the Twins on the 30th anniversary, actually. We welcome Jeff Reardon to the Fantasy Sports Network. Jeff, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Good. I'm doing fine. Nice being on the show.
Hey, well, it's our pleasure to have you on. So I grew up in Montreal, watching you, Alice, Gary, et cetera, Andre, the whole lot, Larry Parrish, the whole lot of you guys. So I think of you as an Expo. But, you know, you were around so long and you had an impact in so many different cities. It must be interesting to you that, you know, you're sort of known as an Expo, a Twin. Hey, when you're in Boston, they love you in Boston. You know, it must be unique for you that, you know, you have fans in so many different cities, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice feeling, but Montreal, you know, Montreal was a team that was the longest. We had 5.5, 6 years. So, you know, I have a lot of fans up there, and I appreciate all them. And, you know, second, of course, would be Minnesota and then Boston. But, you know, it's nice to be remembered by the fans of Montreal. We still have friends up there that we visit. You know, I was just up there, I don't know, a couple months ago doing an autograph thing to raise money. I'm hoping they get baseball back.
Yeah, there's a push for it, and Major League Baseball wants it. The mayor of Montreal wants it. There's some money there in Montreal right now. You were there when millions of fans were coming out to Olympic Stadium. So let's talk a little Expo baseball right now. We were fortunate enough to have Tim Raines on the show last month or so, right after it was announced he was going to be inducted to the Hall of Fame. You saw Tim as a youngster coming in. Did you realize at that time, like, whoa, this guy's, like, whoa, really special? Was he, like, you know, they call him The Rock, and people kid about, you know, the various reasons why he was called The Rock. But at that time, guys really weren't in shape like him, right, Jeff? Like, he was pretty crazy, man. Like, what was it like? What was your initial take on Tim when you met him for the first time?
Well, I was surprised at how advanced he was, you know, in the all-around game, because, you know, he was younger than me, and I had already had a couple of years in the big leagues. He came up a little after me, and I was surprised how polished he was, you know, as a runner, you know, a hitter, an outfielder, a leadoff man, and, you know, and how well he got along with the whole team. You know, you never know if a kid's going to be a Hall of Famer, but he had the ability to be it, and he played long enough to really make it to the Hall of Fame, which he deserved.
Now, he's going to be joining Andre Dawson, the Hawk, and, of course, Gary Carter. And it's amazing the love. People, you know, I don't think people realize it. Like, oh, Montreal wasn't a baseball city. Little do they know that there's an exhibit going on right now in Montreal with Expo memorabilia. And there's actually a wax statue of Gary Carter there. And Gary Carter's family is in Montreal as we speak. I saw the interview yesterday on local television in Montreal. There's a street named after Gary Carter. And, you know, I know you were close, and not just from a battery mate situation, but your families were close too, weren't they, Jeff, with Gary?
Yeah, we lived like two streets from each other for like over 34 years until we moved just in the last year. So we've been neighbors and friends and, you know, playing golf all those years. He helped me so much, our family, when my son died when he was 20, and, you know, I never thought I'd be trying to help Sandy get by, you know, with Gary dying. So, yeah, there was a lot of closeness between us, and of course, you know, he was the best catcher I ever threw it in. All the teams I was with, it threw in a lot of catchers.
You know, I tell you what, and, you know, you could have been there as well, but we don't, and I get it. We're in a different society right now. Things have changed. I get that, but I remember as a youngster, man, going to Coach St. Luke Park on Saturday mornings, and I was a little catcher, man, and there's Gary Carter. You know, a Major League Baseball all-star hanging with the kids, you know, saying, no, you got to put your hand behind your back, kids, so you don't get the foul tips on your hand, and showing the kids these little tips. You know, he was just so real and genuine, man. Like, I got goosebumps thinking about Gary right now.
Yeah, I think he was the perfect, perfect athlete for any kid to look up to. He was so nice to everyone, and, you know, the fans. He was nice to the press. He was a hell of a player, and he was almost like the Tim Tebow of old days. He was loved by everyone. You know?
But he was real. He was real, yeah, right? Because some of these guys, you find out, like, they're big phonies. You're like, oh, that guy was living a lie. But Gary was really genuine.
No, he was real. He was very family-oriented. You know, he wasn't a drinker at all. You know, really into the Lord and all that stuff. I mean, he couldn't have been a better person. And, you know, it makes you wonder when somebody like that has to go. But the way their family is with religion, you know, they... You know, Sandy felt that God needed him up there, and yeah. I guess it's great to have those feelings. You know, a lot of people can't take it like that, but that's how powerful their minds were.
Yeah, it's tough, and you know, I know you. I have so much respect for you. You've been to hell and back, and you're still standing right now. Listen, I wanted to ask you about Blue Monday. I have to ask for the Expo fans that are watching. I've spoken to Bill Lee a lot over the years, and, you know, he said I don't mean this as disrespect against Steve or Steve Rogers, but he goes, to this day, I don't understand. You know, he goes, we would have gotten him out, the bullpen. You know, he goes, I was there. Woody Freiman was there. You were there. And I'm not here to throw Steve Rogers or Fanning under the bus. It's been a long time, Jeff, but it's an opportunity for me to ask somebody that was part of this history that really might have changed everything for Montreal baseball history. What do you think about it? Every time I'm watching a playoff game, dude, and they bring in the starting pitcher in a spot like this, I can't help but think about Steve Rogers on October the 19th in 1981.
Yeah, I was the one there. You know, Bill Lee can say what he wants about, you know, he could have got out or whatever. But I was actually warming up alongside of Steve Rogers down the right field bullpen when the bullpen used to be there. And there was no indication to me that I wasn't going to be coming in, because I started to walk over the line when the umpire made the signal for the guy with the beard. Well, at the time, we both had the beard, and I thought Steve Rogers was warming up for game one of the World Series. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going around later years that I was hurt, I couldn't pitch, and that wasn't true. I had a little twinge in my arm out in L.A., but I was ready for that game. I mean, the trainer said I was ready to go. And no disrespect to Steve either. He was an ace. I think it was just Fanning's decision that, you know, even though I helped get him there, Steve was our ace of our staff, but you know, it's a different ball game when you're used to going into close games like I was, and you know, being a starting pitcher, it's a whole different thing. And then somebody told me I'd struck out Rick Monday 4 out of 4 times. I don't think the fans felt that. They'd be even more pissed off.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. How did you feel? Let me ask you. Not after. How did you feel when you were warming up, thinking I'm going in right now? How did you feel that in that moment?
I was really pumped, and, you know, I had a little twinge, and we had an off day, I think, or a snow day.
Yeah, because the game got postponed till Monday, exactly.
Yeah, and they worked on my, worked on my arm, and when I warmed up, I was 100%, so I was itching to get in because they had a couple righties up first. I'm sure I would have faced Monday, but, you know, after hearing, I didn't even know I struck about 4 out of 4 times.
I didn't know this, Jeff, either. I'm getting pissed right now. Come on.
I know. Every time I mention it, people say that. You know, and I don't even remember. You know, of course, I remember pitching them, but, you know, I don't know when it was, you know. But it could have been after. I don't know. You'd have to look up my National League career, but I know I faced them before then.
Tim Raines.
I was all set to go.
Tim Raines told me, I asked him, I said, what do you remember about that day? And he said, listen, I was a rookie. And he said, so it was my first year. I didn't really fully grasp the moment of it. But he said, when I was standing there, I didn't really realize. And he goes, I looked into some of the guys on vets' eyes on the team. And he goes, I saw how devastated they were. And he goes, I didn't know how to say. He told me basically he didn't know how to react. He said, I was young. I kind of like just froze. He goes, it was like I didn't realize what had happened. What was your recollection? You guys walk in the room after. Does anybody say to Fanning, what the hell just happened here? Or is it silent? What happened after?
It was complete silence for, you know, a long time, even when the writers came in. I think everyone was shocked. I think the game ended with Jerry White or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, we were just shocked, you know, that we were that close. The veterans knew that it meant the World Series, and when you know the Yankees won that year, so that would have changed Montreal history, I hate to tell you. I think if they had a World Series championship under their belt, you know, they wouldn't.
Yeah, it was even worse, right? Dodgers, you saw the Dodgers go on and win after.
No, I know. You know, I think we would have won that World Series, and things, the history of baseball might have been different.
And then 94, they got screwed. Listen, we're almost out of time, but on a more positive note, I was reading an interview with you, and it's something that I've always felt about life as well, and that I'm a big believer in the journey, Jeff, not a destination. If you think that, oh, if I just won the lottery, I'd be happier. If I got rich, I'd be happier. If I had this chick, I'd be happier. If I had that, you're never going to be happy if you're looking for an object, so to speak, as opposed to enjoying the ride. And you stating that you clinching in that moment, you knew you were going to the World Series in 87, was every bit as special as winning the World Series. I got goosebumps.
Yeah, it was. That was one hell of a year that year, especially to come from Montreal, you know, and, you know, go to a last place team and become the world champion. And just to get the pitch, you know. I mean, there's an example. Viola had retired 17 in a row, but they still were with me.
Yeah. That's why Kelly's a two-time World Series champion and Fanning's right. Not.
Yeah, so they did just the opposite back in 81.
I'm getting mad again, Jeff. We got to get out of here. Let's do this again, my man.
Yeah, call me anytime and get a hold of Josh Rimmer. No problem.
Hey, good stuff. Thanks. Thanks, Jeff.
Nice talking to you.
There's Jeff Reardon. We're getting the hook. He's taking the ball. Thanks, Warman. That was great stuff. I'm getting depressed and angry. Son of a picks coming up next. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. We got a lot of picks, a lot of different sports. Let's start off with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I just don't get why the Phillies are ever favored against anybody. Give me the D-back tonight at +110. Give me Max Scherzer, -45 in the Big Apple. Marlins, don't look now, man, but the Marlins, only 6 games under 500. They're 12-5 in their last 17. I like the Marlins on the road tonight against the Braves. Red Sox and Astros. Pomeranz is a gas can, all right? Give me Fires and the Strohs. Kansas City Royals, these guys are on a roll right now, man. These guys are winning baseball games. Little arena football for you, man. It's been a little while that we've given you some arena stuff, but I like the Brigade tonight. They beat these guys 63-60 a couple of weeks ago. Now we're getting 7.5, and they put up 123 points, and it totals 109.5. Give me the underdog and give me the over. UFC, Holly Holm and Beth Correa. Over 3.5 rounds, -125. I like it. We're going, I like Dong-Young Kim in an upset against Colby Covington, and Scoggins and Sasaki over 1.5. And we got some late breaking news here, actually, concerning MMA. Hall of Famer, one of the greatest fighters of all time, Matt Hughes, unfortunately, in a big accident. I think he was in a car and he got hit by a moving train, and he's been airlifted to a hospital. Our thoughts and prayers with the Hughes family right now. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.